All right, welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going to do a deep dive into something I bet you guys interact with every single day, but rarely ever think about.
What's that?
Plastic injection molding.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, specifically how engineers achieve this, perfect balance of rigidity and toughness in those ubiquitous plastic parts.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. Our source material is a technical article that really kind of breaks down the science and engineering behind it all.
I mean, it's fascinating, right? Something that we use so commonly has so many complex considerations.
It really
I mean,
does.
we're talking about parts that need to hold their shape under pressure, but
Yeah.
also be able to withstand impacts and stress.
Totally. Think about like just your phone case.
Yeah.
It needs to be rigid enough to protect your phone, but also tough enough to survive a drop.
Right.
And that's kind of like what we're going to unpack here, how they do this.
Yeah.
And our source material really emphasizes the importance of choosing the right material. Like that's step one.
Yeah. It's the foundation, really. You know, different plastics have different inherent strengths.
Right.
And for example, you know, polycarbonate is known for its rigidity, making it a good choice for structural components.
Okay.
Think of it as the oak tree of plastics, strong and unwavering.
Okay, so polycarbonate is our sturdy oak.
Yeah.
What about like if you need something more flexible?
Then you might look at something like polypropylene, which is known for its toughness and flexibility. It's more like a willow branch, you know. It can bend and sway without breaking.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So it can polypropylene is often used in things like hinges or snap fit components where you need that give.
Exactly.
So material selection, it's all about matching the plastic's properties to the specific application.
Yeah.
But our article goes beyond just picking, a single material, right?
Right.
It also talks about alloys and blends.
Right. Sometimes you need the best of both worlds. And a classic example is the PCABS alloy, which combines the rigidity of polycarbonate with the impact resistance of ABS plastic. And it's a popular choice for electronics housings because it can withstand the stress of being snapped together, but also handle those inevitable drops.
That's a great example. I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense that phone cases are often made from that blend.
Right, exactly.
But the article doesn't stop there. It also mentions reinforcements.
Yes.
What are those and why are they used?
Reinforcements are basically additives that are mixed into the plastic to enhance certain properties. Think of it like adding extra support beams to a structure. Things like glass fiber or carbon fiber can be added to boost rigidity and strength. You'll often see this in applications where the part needs to be very stiff, like in automotive components or certain types of tools.
So adding glass fiber is like reinforcing that oak tree we were talking about, making it even stronger.
Exactly.
But wouldn't that also make it less flexible, maybe even more brittle?
Yeah, that's where the, you know, balancing act comes in.
Right.
Adding reinforcements can sometimes decrease toughness, so engineers have to carefully consider the trade-offs.
Sure.
It's not always about maximizing one property, it's about finding the right combination for the specific application.
Our source even includes a table showing how adding glass fiber to polycarbonate increases its rigidity but slightly reduces its toughness. It's fascinating how engineers can fine-tune these properties to get the exact performance they need. But choosing the right material is only part of the story. The article stresses that the injection molding process itself plays a huge EG role in determining the final rigidity and toughness of the part.
Absolutely. The molding process is where the chosen material is transformed into the desired shape.
Right.
And the parameters of this process can have a dramatic impact on the final properties.
So how does this process work? Like, how do they actually?
So imagine molten plastic being injected into a mold under high pressure. It's like pouring batter into a cake pan. But the key is what happens next, the cooling phase.
So the cooling process is like that critical moment when you take a cake out of the oven and let it cool.
Exactly.
If you rush it, it could crack or collapse.
Right, exactly. The way the plastic cools affects how those molecules arrange themselves and bond together.
Right.
If it cools too quickly, it can create internal stresses, making the part more brittle and prone to cracking.
It sounds like controlling the cooling rate is super important. What are some of the other key factors in this process?
So the source dives into three main areas: temperature control, pressure and speed adjustments, and cooling time management. Let's start with temperature. It's crucial to heat the plastic to the right temperature before injecting it into the mold. Too low, and it won't flow properly, leaving gaps or imperfections. Too high, and it can degrade the material, weakening the final part.
So Getting that temperature just right is crucial.
Yeah.
But what about the pressure and speed during the injection process? Do those matter too?
Absolutely. The speed and pressure affect how tightly packed the molecules are in the final part.
Right.
If the pressure is too high or the injection speed is too fast, it can lead to overcompaction, which can make the part more rigid but also more brittle.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot, right?
Exactly.
Not too much pressure, not too little. What about that cooling time we were talking about?
Yeah.
Is that where the magic happens?
So cooling time is where a lot of the fine-tuning occurs. The source mentions a technique called holding pressure, where they maintain a certain pressure on the plastic even as it cools.
Uh-huh.
This helps to ensure that the part solidifies evenly and without voids. But too much holding pressure can actually overcompactify the material, making it brittle. It's like squeezing a sponge too hard. It might lose its flexibility.
So optimizing the injection molding process is like a delicate dance. You have to control all these variables to get the desired balance of rigidity and toughness. But our source doesn't stop there. It also emphasizes the importance of smart design techniques, right?
That's right. Even with the perfect material and a flawless molding process, the design of the part itself plays a crucial role in achieving the desired balance of rigidity and toughness.
All right, let's dive into those design techniques in part two of this deep dive. We'll be right back.
So welcome back. We were talking about how even with, you know, the perfect plastic, the perfect material, and a flawless molding process, the design of the part itself can make or break.
Right.
Whether you get that balance of rigidity and toughness, right?
Yeah, it's almost like architecture.
Yeah.
But for, like, tiny objects, you know?
Yeah.
You have to consider the forces and stresses that the part will experience and design it accordingly.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And our source material dives into some really clever design techniques that engineers use.
Okay.
One of the most, I guess, fundamental ones is optimizing wall thickness.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm picturing like those really sturdy like plastic storage bins.
Yeah.
I bet they have way thicker walls than
absolutely
like a flexible shampoo bottle.
Exactly. Thicker walls provide more rigidity and strength.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas thinner walls allow for more flexibility.
Right.
But it's not just about like overall thickness. It's about strategically distributing the material where it's needed most.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, the bottom of that storage bin might have thicker walls to withstand the weight of the contents.
Makes sense.
While the sides could be slightly thinner to save material and allow for some flexibility.
So it's all about customizing the wall thickness to the specific requirements of the part.
Exactly.
Okay, so what are some of the other like design techniques that are mentioned in this article?
Another clever technique is using ribs.
Ribs?
Ribs, yeah.
Like, as in?
Think of ribs as, like, internal support beams.
Okay.
That add rigidity without adding a lot of bulk.
Okay.
You'll often see ribs in things like plastic lids or housings where you need to maintain a certain shape without making the part too thick and heavy.
Oh, okay. So it's like those corrugations that you see in cardboard, right?
That's a great comparison, yeah.
It kind of adds strength without
exactly
adding a ton of weight.
But, as with most things in engineering, there can be too much of a good thing.
Right.
The article cautions against going overboard with ribs.
Mm.
Too many ribs, or ribs that are too big,
mm,
can actually create stress concentration points, making the part more prone to cracking.
Interesting.
It's like adding too many supports to a bridge.
Uh-huh.
It might become less flexible and more susceptible to damage.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot again, right?
Exactly.
Not too many, not too few, but just the right amount to provide the necessary support.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned fillets earlier.
Yeah.
I'm still a little fuzzy on what those are and why they matter.
Fillets are essentially rounded corners.
Okay.
They might seem like a small detail.
Right.
But they play a crucial role in distributing stress evenly throughout the part.
Okay, now that you mention it, I'm noticing those fillets everywhere. Like
the
corners of my laptop, my phone, even the edges of this table.
Exactly. Fillets are everywhere and for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Sharp corners tend to concentrate stress, making those areas more susceptible to cracking or breaking, especially under impact.
That makes sense.
Think about it this way. If you drop a piece of glass with sharp corners, it's more likely to shatter than a piece of glass with rounded edges.
Right, right.
So fillets are kind of like tiny shock absorbers, preventing those stress points from forming and making the part more durable overall.
It's amazing how much thought goes into
these
like seemingly simple design elements.
Yeah, it really is. And it highlights the importance of considering every aspect of the part, from the material selection to the molding process to the design itself.
Right.
But the journey doesn't end there.
Oh.
Our source material also dives into the often overlooked world of post-processing.
Okay, yeah, we mentioned post-processing briefly in the first part.
Yeah.
I'm curious to learn more about what that entails
and
why it's so important.
So post-processing refers to any treatments or modifications that are done to the part after it's been molded.
Okay.
And these treatments can further enhance the part's properties, particularly its rigidity and toughness.
It's like adding the finishing touches, right?
Exact to a masterpiece.
It's taking that raw molded part and refining it to achieve its full potential.
I like that.
Yeah.
So what are some of the common post-processing techniques that are mentioned in the source?
One of the most common techniques is annealing, which we touched on briefly earlier.
Yeah, I remember you comparing it to, like, giving the plastic a relaxing spa day.
Exactly.
To release tension.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit on how that annealing process actually works?
So remember how we talked about how rapid cooling during the molding process can sometimes trap stresses within the plastic?
Right.
Annealing addresses that by slowly heating the part to a specific temperature.
Okay.
Holding it there for a set time and then slowly cooling it down.
This controlled heating and cooling cycle allows the plastic molecules to rearrange themselves into a more relaxed and stable configuration.
So it's like giving those molecules a chance to, like, stretch out and find their happy place.
Exactly.
But the article mentions that annealing temperatures and times need to be carefully tailored to the specific type of plastic.
Yeah.
Why is that so important?
Because each plastic has a unique melting point and molecular structure.
Mm-hmm.
If you heat a plastic too high or for too long,
right,
you risk degrading the material, actually weakening it instead of strengthening it.
Interesting.
Conversely, if you don't heat it enough or for long enough, you might not fully relieve those internal stresses.
So it's like finding that Goldilocks zone again.
Exactly.
Not too hot, not too cold, but just right.
Just right, yeah.
But how do engineers figure out the optimal annealing temperature and time for a specific plastic?
That's where, you know, material science and a bit of experimentation come in. They consider factors like the plastic's melting point, its molecular weight, and the level of stress present in the molded part.
Okay.
There are also industry standards and guidelines that provide recommended annealing parameters for different types of plastics.
So it's a very precise process.
It is.
That requires a deep understanding of the material.
It does.
But what about other post-processing techniques besides annealing? The article also mentioned, like, surface treatments, right?
Yes. Surface treatments are another powerful tool for enhancing the properties of plastic parts.
Okay.
They can be used to improve hardness, wear resistance, and even add aesthetic appeal.
So it's like giving the plastic a makeover.
Yeah, exactly.
What are some of the common surface treatment techniques?
There's a wide range of surface treatments. But two common ones are spraying and electroplating.
Okay.
Spraying involves applying a thin coating to the surface of the part.
Hmm.
This coating could be a paint, a lacquer, or even a functional coating that provides specific properties like UV resistance or lubricity.
So spraying is kind of like adding a protective layer or even like a decorative finish to the part.
Yeah, exactly.
What about electroplating? What's that all about?
So electroplating is a bit more involved.
Hmm.
It involves using an electrochemical process to deposit a thin layer of metal onto the surface of the plastic.
Okay.
Common metals used for electroplating include chrome, nickel, and copper.
So it's like giving the plastic like a metallic armor.
Exactly.
What are the benefits of doing that?
So electroplating can significantly enhance the part's hardness and wear resistance.
Okay.
It's often used for parts that experience a lot of friction or abrasion, like gears, bearings, or decorative trim.
It seems like post-processing opens up like a whole new world of possibilities.
It does.
But are there any like potential downsides or trade-offs that you have to think about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As with everything, there are trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
Some surface treatments, especially those that involve applying a hard coating,
right,
can make the plastic more rigid, but potentially less tough. It's like adding a layer of armor.
Mm.
It might protect the part from scratches and wear.
Yeah.
But it could also make it more susceptible to cracking under impact.
So once again, it comes down to that balance.
Exactly.
That we kept talking about.
It always does.
You have to weigh the benefits of the surface treatment against the potential impact on the part's overall toughness.
Yeah.
This entire deep dive has been so enlightening.
Like,
Ideal.
we've explored the intricate world of plastic injection molding from material selection to the molding process itself, and finally to this, like, fascinating realm of post-processing.
It's amazing how much goes into it.
It really is.
It's clear that creating plastic parts with that perfect balance of rigidity and toughness is a multifaceted challenge that requires careful consideration of every step in the process.
We'll be right back to wrap up our deep dive into this fascinating topic. Welcome back to our deep dive into plastic injection molding. I feel like we've been on a wild ride.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. We've covered so much ground. You know, everything from, like, the molecular structure of plastics
right,
to
yeah.
those really, you know, intricate design choices that go into creating these everyday objects that we, like, don't even think twice about.
Yeah, we take them for granted, for sure.
Total.
So we started by talking about how, you know, material selection is so important.
Yeah.
Like, choosing, you know, the right wood for a specific building project.
Absolutely. It's the foundation.
It is.
And we talked about how polycarbonate, you know, our oak tree.
Yeah, I like that.
Is known for its rigidity and strength.
Right.
Making it a good choice for things like structural components or, you know, protective cases and things.
Right. Then we had polypropylene.
Yeah.
The, you know, the willow branch.
The willow branch, which is all about flexibility.
Yeah. It's all about that perfect for, like, you know, hinges and snap fit mechanisms and things.
Exactly.
But sometimes you need, you know, a little bit of both. You need a combination of those properties.
Right. And that's where those alloys and blends come in.
Right.
Like the PCABS blend we were talking about.
Right. Which is kind of like, you know, it finds that nice sweet spot, right?
It does.
Between that rigidity and impact resistance.
Yeah. And it makes it a good choice for those electronics housings that we were discussing. Well.
So it can take a little bit of a beating.
Yeah.
And, oh, we can't forget about those reinforcements.
The reinforcements, yes.
It's amazing how adding, like, you know, something like a glass fiber to a plastic can be like, you know, reinforcing concrete with rebar.
Absolutely. It gives it that extra.
Gives it that extra oomph.
Yeah. Strength and stiffness.
For demanding applications and things.
Exactly. For when you need that added support.
But it is a balance, right?
It is.
Adding those reinforcements can sometimes make the plastic a little more brittle. So, you know, engineers kind of have to weigh those options carefully.
Consider those trade-offs. Exactly.
Then we moved on to, like, the actual injection molding process itself.
Yeah.
We learned about, you know, the importance of controlling all those different variables, like the temperature, the pressure, and the cooling time.
Yeah. It's like conducting an orchestra.
Oh, I like that.
You know, each parameter has to be perfectly in tune.
Yeah.
To ensure that those plastic molecules, you know, arrange themselves in a way that achieves that balance.
Right, to give you the final properties that you want. I loved that, I think it was your analogy, right, of the cooling process being like letting a cake cool slowly to prevent it from cracking.
Too much heat or too rapid cooling can, you know, introduce stress
right.
on the plastic, which can lead to breaking.
Yeah, and then we also delved into some, you know, pretty cool design techniques, like optimizing, you know, wall thickness, strategically placing, like, those ribs for reinforcement.
Yeah, the ribs, they act like little support beams inside, and then fillets to help distribute stress and prevent those weak points.
Yeah, those fillets are kind of sneaky, right?
They are.
They're everywhere, but...
They are, and they're doing important work.
You don't really notice them.
Right.
But they're so important.
They're critical.
It's amazing how much thought goes into designing even the, like, the simplest plastic part.
It's a microcosm of engineering ingenuity.
It really is.
When you think about all that goes into it.
Yeah, and finally, you know, we kind of explored this world of post-processing.
Yeah.
Where treatments like annealing and surface modifications can, like, further refine a part's properties.
Right. Annealing, it's like a spa treatment.
That plastic spa day.
For the plastic to relieve the stress.
Relieve that internal stress.
Like
so it's tougher and less likely to crack over time.
And then surface treatments like spraying or electroplating.
Right.
They can add protective layers or enhance specific properties like hardness and wear resistance.
It's amazing how much goes on behind the scenes to create these plastic parts that we, you know, just use every day without thinking.
This deep dive has really given us a new appreciation for the complexity and ingenuity that goes into, you know, manufacturing even the most I guess, mundane plastic object.
Right. So next time you pick up, like, you know, a plastic water bottle or use a plastic tool or something, take a minute to, like, think about the journey it took to get there.
Right. Think about all those steps.
All those steps.
From that, you know, selection of materials.
Right.
That careful molding process.
Yeah.
And those finishing touches of the post-processing.
It really is amazing.
It's a testament to human innovation.
Yeah.
And our ability to, you know, manipulate materials at like a molecular level.
Right.
To create these objects that meet our specific needs.
It's a good reminder that, you know, there's often more to things.
There is.
Than meets the eye.
A lot more.
And even the simplest objects can have a fascinating story.
Absolutely.
If you know where to look.
Well, this has been a fantastic exploration.
It has.
Into the world of plastic injection molding.
We hope you've enjoyed this deep dive.
We hope you learned something new.
And until next time, keep those brains curious.